I tell you to be different and creative and think this way. A much used business cliche. Kayla.
What is outside the box?
You got it.
We're flying high with the wings and talking all things lacrosse. You're now listening to the Outside the Box podcast right here on Underground Sports Philadelphia. OTB Nation, welcome in to episode number 302 of the award-nominated, honorably mentioned, number 9 NCAA ranked, and of course viewable on YouTube, Outside the Box podcast, the official lacrosse pod on the Underground Sports Philadelphia Podcast Network. It's KB and Deej coming at you from a lunchtime special as the boys are housing down food and getting in. This final episode before the holiday season is officially here. But before we get into everything, make sure you guys are following us on the socials at OTB LaxPod, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads. Follow our Facebook page for the company, facebook.com/undergroundsportsphi. You can follow Deej on Twitter at @SCS_nextgreat. Follow me at KBIZZL311. Subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating and review. It really does help the show continue to grow, helps us hit new milestones, and allows us to do really dope stuff for you guys and with you guys. So continue subscribing wherever you get your podcasts in audio form. And of course, subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. That's where you get full video episodes of this show every single week. Full video episodes of every show on our network, live streams, shorts, clips, original video content. It's all on the YouTube channel, which, shout out to everybody. We hit our end of year goal already, so let's keep it pushing. Let's keep the subscribers going. We're at 701 subscribers right now on the YouTube channel. Let's get to like 725 before the ball drops on New Year's. Let's get 24 more of you to subscribe before a new year rolls around. And of course, the big goal in 2024 is 1K and beyond, so keep on subscribing, smash that like button, ring the bell icon. We did get a very good comment on our most recent episode, Deej, that I want to bring up for the people. And this is why you should comment, because we read the good comments on the podcast. This is what happens when you comment on our shows. We read the good ones. This comes from YouTube user at TimHayes8509. This was about our chrome foil hat theory. Hot take. As much as I'd love to see Pressler and Matt Danowski coach against each other, there's some bad blood over Matt not making Team USA in 2010. I think Dad Danowski would be more likely to coach PLL than Matt. Paul has loved hiring retired college coaches. Matt takes John's reins at Duke, and John moves on to coach the Lizards on the island when they come back in 2028.
Well, we had talked about the first half of that when we first thought Chrome was going to be getting a new coach in Sudan. We'd be stepping down. So yep. That piece, totally agree with, makes a bunch of sense. The other pieces are interesting. I knew he didn't make the team, but I didn't know there was beef behind that and like extra things with that. And really, he thinks Lizards are coming. Well, I mean, did you see they dropped it was like a picture, so it was like an informational picture, and it had like New York Atlas, and it was like one of the home spots was like Albany.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I did see that. It kind of makes sense for that to be Albany if they're going to be bringing the lizards back and putting them back on Long Island.
Yeah, and I mean,
the theories are starting to line up possibly with how things are shaking out with cities and coaches and other things.
That lines up too with like any professional sports league with having multiple teams in New York and having that inner city rivalry. So that's why you got to comment, because we read the good comments on the show. But yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel and get your merch at phiapparel.co. It's never too late to treat yourself this holiday season with OTB shirts, hoodies, Underground Sports Philadelphia merch. And if you're a Philly sports fan, like I know a lot of our listeners are, gear up. Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, Sixers, Union, you name it, plus unreal original Philly-centric designs. The only fans, PH fans shirt, need that in my repertoire. They've got some awesome stuff over at PHI Apparel Company. They're the best in the game. Go to phiapparel.co, and when you go to check out, use code UNDERGROUND for 10% off your merch orders. It's the most effective and direct way to support everything we're doing here at Underground Sports Philadelphia. So go get your merch, phiapparel.co, code UNDERGROUND for 10% off your order. Deej, no free ads. You've got a pretzel baconator in hand and in mouth, but what's going on, brother?
That baconator was good, and this peppermint frosty is not bad, but like you said, no free ads. I'm doing pretty good, man. I got to coach last weekend, which always makes me super happy. We get more lacrosse this weekend, and literally just around the corner is Michigan playing Alabama. I'm coasting right now. The NFC North has a chance of sliding three teams into the playoffs somehow. Like, and one of them is the Packers. Like, I lost in fantasy by 10. And it's my fault. It's my fault. I played Raheem Mostert and Austin Eckler over Jahmyr Gibbs and James Conner. I played Jake Ferguson over
James Conner. Do that much more than Raheem Mostert?
40-some more, 50-some more. You got to remember, my league's total PPR, like 1 yard's 1 point. So, like, he did it much better than Mostert did. I didn't play. I could have played Tua over Sam Howell. I thought Sam Howell was going to have a much better game. He didn't. Could have played Trey McBride over Jake Ferguson. Like, I made mistakes all across the board and only lost by 10. So, like, this one's on me. I'm not even mad. Like, I should have did. And I really blame the guy I'm playing for third place, because he kept saying during the regular season, oh, championship's going to be good, man. It's going to be us. And I'm like, dude, stop. You are jinxing us so bad, man. You need to stop. And he just kept doing it. And look at us, playing for third place instead of the championship.
I'm here to report that I did win my quarterfinals matchup in my fantasy league.
Let's go.
We are moving on. We got a nice hard-earned victory in week 15 by about 15 points, 15 and a half points. We put up 148.54, which in my league, that's like cracked. That's like huge points. Opponent put up 133.16. I was sweating it out, but luckily I had two guys on Monday night to kind of seal the deal for me. But we've got our semifinal this week, and right now we are favored by 62% to advance to our championship. No offense to you, I have to pray on the downfall of Jordan Love this week, because my opponent has Jordan Love.
We can win without him. I mean, without him, we can win with him playing bad, because we've done it this year.
He's also got Aaron Jones, so I have to pray on the downfall of Aaron Jones as well.
Okay. I don't know how to respond to that, because we can't really win without both of them playing well.
I need it to be a huge, massive AJ Dillon game.
You want one of them Los Angeles Chargers, New England Patriots kind of games.
Yeah. Where it's
just a bunch of trash and the scoreboard ends up really low.
Or even like that one Bills Patriots game last year where like the Patriots didn't throw the ball once and it was just like people running for their lives in terrible weather, even though I know it's going to be in Carolina, but it was a monsoon there last week. So who knows what the deal is. But we're looking good. We're projected to win by like 13 points and advance to our championship, which then if that happens, more than likely facing off against league commissioner, friend of the program, known lacrosse head, 100-goal scorer at Vineland High School in his career, Mikey Ostrowski, who his roster is absolutely cracked each. He's got Jalen Hurts, CeeDee Lamb, Cooper Kupp, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, David Njoku, Mike Evans, Jake Elliott, and the Denver Broncos defense. And then on his bench is Brandon Ayuk, Dalton Kincaid, Brian Robinson Jr., Kyler Murray, Najee Harris, Jerry Jeudy. How our league allows him to do this is beyond me. It's literally the, he can't keep getting away with this.
But he can.
But he does. And it would be quite the anxious going into the new year battle playing Mikey in fantasy for a championship for the second or third time in league history.
This was supposed to be my year, bro.
But I'm just happy I advanced. I haven't been in the playoffs in 3 years, so.
You know what? I like this. Because what's going to happen is Michigan's going to beat Bama. Then they're going to win the national championship. And then I can just do the same thing they did. A couple years ago, 2 years ago, got into the playoffs, won a game, couldn't really figure it out. Got into the playoffs last year. Almost got to the championship. Lost by five. No, I did get to the championship last year. And I lost by five in the championship. This is the year. This was supposed to be the year. So it's okay. I didn't get there this year. Next year, we got it. We're running it up.
Well, DJ, you ready for this one? Is it Albany's year? What a segue. Because the Albany Firewolves are on. Let's recap the week that was in the NLL. Week three looked a little something. Shout out to Swizz Beatz like this. Saskatchewan Rush put on a clinic on the Vegas Desert Dogs, 17-5 in Vegas. The Albany Firewolves take down a shorthanded Philadelphia Wings squad, 15-10 at the Wells Fargo Center. The Halifax Thunderbirds zapped the New York Riptide, 14-6. Buffalo celebrates banner-raising night in winning fashion, beating San Diego 12-9. And Vancouver, how you doing? More than doubles up the Georgia Swarm, 15-7.
Hey, chill out. You did not have to do all that.
Quite the week in the NLL. What stood out to you? What was some of the highlights, some of the low light, and something that just really blew your mind?
Highlight. Albany is alive and here, and they're ready to play, and they look fantastic. Every part of their team looks good right now, from having Joe back at the stripe. Why am I blanking on their goalie right now? Wow.
Doug Jamison.
Yes. Sorry. Thank you. Doug Jamison. To everything they have up front offensively, they look every part of a championship team right now, especially after beating the defending champions last week. They look really, that's what all I just kept thinking throughout the game was, wow, they just beat Buffalo last week. And now they still look good. They still look good. That's like the highlight for me right now is Albany is alive. They are here. Low light. I can't tell if it's Georgia coming back out flat after doing what they did last week against, Colorado, or if it's Saskatchewan absolutely rolling through Vegas and Vegas just not looking good whatsoever. I mean, Lyle had 4 points. But, I mean, Ryan Martell went for 9. Dauber had 30 saves, so, like, no defense was being played, which I said would be an issue at some point. We've talked about that. I think every year since I've been on, we've talked about Georgia kind of having a suspect defense, and that's where things have always been shaky for them. So I that's a serious low light. I guess now I found my true low light is that, like, Georgia still having troubles defensively is huge to me. And the wow factor was obviously my Riptide. 14-6. Like, did I expect them to beat Halifax? No, I didn't. That's why I picked Halifax to win. But I didn't expect them to go out and get embarrassed 14-6. Like, it just never looked close or competitive at most moments. Like, Halifax had complete control from the first whistle to literally the very last. Like, it was no question at all how the game was going to go at any point.
Yeah, I think a couple of highlights from me. Insert the Shaq. I apologize. I wasn't familiar with your game meme. Alex Simmons is the truth, bro. That boy, nice. Like, that boy, nice meme where he's looking out the window, that's Alex Simmons. I don't want to hear nothing about advanced analytics stat nerds because he even fills those boxes. That boy is nice. Him and Ewok together with Albany as a 1-2 punch on that offense is crazy. They're playing. I don't know if it's.
And I got my oranges out. I got my oranges out already because I know Brian knows Lax is going to tweet back at us when he hears that about Simmons, because that's all he tweeted about this weekend was Alex Simmons and how he's a Syracuse guy.
We got to make an orange slices shirt.
We do, just for him, because he'll buy them all.
Like, that boy, nice. And it's crazy to think that, like, the Riptide traded Kira McArdle to Albany with a draft pick and everything, and that draft pick ended up being Alex Simmons for Riley O'Connor. Imagine if I saw Adam Levy, friend of the program, tweet about that. Imagine if the Riptide had Alex Simmons on the right and Jeff Teat on the left. Good grief. That would be insane. But Albany's, I don't know if it's them exceeding expectations or, like, playing above expectations per se, but, like, they're in rare territory right now in the early season where, like, they're the best team in the league, obviously by record alone, but, like, you can't pick against them. Like, they're playing with, like, an X-Dog factor that's through the roof. Talk about embarrassments. Las Vegas, our league pass team, that was embarrassing. To have such an emotional overtime win the week before and to come out so flat like you did in this one was tough. And then, like you said about the Riptide, like, their shot selection, bro, is so off. It's so off. They could have easily been in that game till the very end, but they're just taking so many just, like, unnecessary shots. And instead of getting the best one, they're taking the first one. And they right. just have to be so much more calculated with their shot selection. Otherwise, they're not going to be live come February in a unified standings.
Right. Let me look at this game recap really quick if it loads.
Right.
Like, so, when you tell me that the Riptide lose 14-6, I would assume that Warren Hill has 50 saves, 60 saves. And then you tell me he has 32. And I'm going to go, oh, so Halifax just played, like, really good defense. And then you go, no. And I'm like, well, what? It would never – I would try and find anything other than the offense doesn't look good and isn't taking smart shots. Because last year, sure, they didn't win a lot of games, but they were losing them 15-11, 16-13, 14-12. Like, they were scoring still with everybody, and they were close. Some games they were losing – I think they lost one last year 15-14, and they almost – in the one we were at, they almost took the overtime. Like, that one was super close, and it was high scoring. Like, you wouldn't think with the names that they have offensively and how they play that they would ever be in a position where they're not taking smart shots or not getting enough shots simply because it's on the offense. The defenses aren't doing anything special that they haven't seen before. They're just not – I don't know, man. It's weird to watch.
I mean, this is all you have to hear. Callum Jones from the Riptide had 22 penalty minutes. He had a 10-minute game misconduct. But I want you to hear this one. Riley O'Connor, who was brought in to be kind of that 1-2 punch with Jeff Teat. Riley O'Connor finished this game, Deej, with 2 points. 1 goal, 1 assist. How many shots on goal do you think Riley O'Connor took? Or had, I should say.
7? 10.
You have 1 goal with 10 shots on goal?
I mean, it depends.
Pairing that with the stat you mentioned with Warren Hill having 32 saves, that's crazy. You got to spread the ball around. That's telling me, like, Riley O'Connor didn't really have, like, his shot that night, and you got to try to find somebody who's open and allow the offense to kind of be more multidimensional.
I guess the toughest thing with that is how good of shots did he take? You know, like, if there are doorstop chances and Warren Hill's just making good saves, or it's Manna, you know, they're on the power play and he's firing from the outside a little bit, and it gets like, he just had your number tonight. Like, that's not
Kyle Matisse had the best game for the Riptide. He had three. Yeah. He had a hat trick with 6 shots on goal. Like, that's money from a guy who is like a forward / transition hybrid. And genuinely, I do think the Wings are going to regret trading Kyle Matisse to the Riptide.
Yes, they will. I think they already do.
Yeah, that's a story for another day.
At least the offense looks okay for you guys without...
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Hold in.
It was just like you got overmatched down the stretch, and I think early on you allowed Albany to kind of set a tone where, like, it was 3-0 Albany early, and then you clawed back. Sam LeClair played well, and what did I say on this podcast? Sam LeClair is going to be a guy that's got to step up, and I figured he would. You go into halftime, and it's tied 6-6, and then Albany just goes on an absolute blitzkrieg bop, 6-1. And then you're even in the fourth quarter. That determined the game right there. You know, you lose the game in the third quarter. That's something that has kind of plagued the Wings, too, over the past couple of years, is coming out of halftime slow. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they have to do to figure things out. And I'll tell you what, man, not having Trevor Baptiste is going to fucking kill this team. Not having a guy who is, I know it's different than the field game with faceoffs in terms of like the box game, because in a lot of instances, those guys are just immediately getting off the floor outside of a couple, like Inards, like Trevor, like Jake Withers, like TD. But those are like your unicorns almost. But not having a guy who can win faceoffs for you, when the past 4 years you've had arguably the number one faceoff guy at the stripe for you. The Wings went 7 of 29 against Nards. You're not going to win games going 7 of 29 at the stripe. And, you know, the Wings had a great power play in this game. They went 4 of 7 on the power play, limited Albany to 1 of 5 on the power play. Penalty minutes were down for both teams. But when you're clawing from behind and not having the defense that you need late in games, and you let Alex Simmons go off for 8 points, you let Ty Kurtz have 5 points, Travis Longboat had 4 points, Nathan Grennan, who had 4 points, sneaky pickup that, like, we didn't emphasize enough. Panther City letting him go and him going to Albany was a sneaky pickup. Ewok had 8 points. Sam Firth had 5 points. Like, Albany was sharing the ball so much, and it just overpowered the Wings defense. And, you know, we talked last year when Brock Sorensen came back for, what, 2 quarters? The Wings just don't have an enforcer on their defense, and that's a problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be a problem. You got to have somebody that's going to step up and kind of just make things tough and or create that. Hey, if you're going to come into this space, into this area, you're going to feel it. You're going to know, and the Wings kind of don't have that. They play aggressive and they play hard and they play with body, but like there aren't many big hits that the Wings lay. There aren't that like that tough like, oh, you came and took a shot inside, here's the shoulder, even though I'm like two steps late. Like they don't really have that, and that's a big part of lacrosse, whether you're playing indoor or out. Like box, field, sixes, speed. If you ask me, even speed lacrosse, like if you're coming, if somebody's going to shoot in the middle, you got to let them know that they're not just going to be able to do that over and over, or they will.
And we talked about it too with the Wings offense. Like the big dogs stepped up in this game. That was the majority of your offense. Joey Rez had 6 points. Mitch Jones had 6 points. Ben McIntosh had 4 points. Tate Cotone stepping up in a big way had 4 points. I want to see where Sam McClure had the one goal. Mike McCannell had 2 assists. But like outside of that, like Taggart Clark had his first goal in a Wings uniform playing against his dad's team, which was dope. But you need more offense from your depth guys. You need Sam McClure to have 2-3 goals in a game like this. You need, you need Ben McIntosh to score more than one goal in a game like this. You need Tanner Buck, even though, you know, he's been with the team for like all 2 weeks, you need him to step up and be a guy as a veteran. And as much as I love Ian Lord, he's a great dude. Him still being on this roster at his age is crazy. Like the Wings truly do need to go out and get that enforcer on defense, because Ian Lord is like almost 40 years old and played for the Wings before they left to become the New England Black Wolves. And he's still playing. It's not that he's bad, but it's like he's one of those like fourth line in hockey type of guys that is just going to bully you, but he's older. So that's the only reason he's out on the fourth line. You need somebody who's a big body enforcer on defense, and who knows? You know, the Wings have some time off now, which will be nice for them. Their next game isn't until after Christmas in Halifax, so that'll be another big test without Blaze, without holding Cotone, but kind of ticks closer to their return times as well, which is nice. So we'll see how everything plays out for them there, but overall, quite the week in the NLL. This is what the standings look like in the league as of this recording. Albany in first place at 3-0, followed by Halifax and Rochester at 2-0. Toronto is 1-0. Panther City, Buffalo, Vancouver, San Diego follow that up at 1-1, along with the Georgia Swarm. Saskatchewan, Philadelphia, Las Vegas all at 1-2. And then your only winless teams in the league are the Colorado Mammoth, who are 0-1. Calgary Roughnecks are 0-2. And the New York Riptide also at 0-2. Colorado has a chance to get on the board this week as they have a game at home against Georgia. So a little revenge factor there. Let's shift to our week 4 preview, Teach. Toronto, Panther City, Georgia, Colorado, Vancouver, Rochester. Get your tomahawk shades ready for these ones, ladies and gents. 3 games leading into the holiday season, and no better way to do it than with our pals at Tomahawk Shades, the best small batch eyewear in the game. From sunglasses to blue light glasses to ski goggles and prescription lenses, Tomahawk Shades has you covered for a fraction of the price of the big eyewear companies. They are truly the most comfortable sunglasses I own, the best blue light glasses in terms of eliminating that harsh blue light, and honestly helps me with like preventing headaches. I sleep better because of wearing them. You guys can get your own. Go to TomahawkShades.com or download the Tomahawk Shades app in the Apple App Store or Google Play. And when you go to check out, use code USP for 25% off your order. That's code USP at TomahawkShades.com or in the Tomahawk Shades app for 25% off the best small batch eyewear in the game. Week 4, Deej, it starts in Panther City Friday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Toronto at Panther City. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
I really like the way Toronto has started the year. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I say that. That's what I thought. They beat Philadelphia back in week 2. But I mean, obviously, I'm expecting Tom Schreiber to be back. So that's only supposed to elevate this team and make them even better. So that's the biggest thing, is whether he plays or not. Can, I guess that's what I'm looking at, is if he comes back, does that change the team at all? Which I don't think it should. It should only make them better. I don't know if that throws anybody's rhythm off from week two, who was playing very well in that game. Or on the flip side of that, if he doesn't come back, are they able to keep the momentum they had going from week one? Are they able to come out with another victory? And then Panther City's got to look to bounce back. Yeah, bounce back. Because they lost their first game of the year to Vegas. And I don't think I picked Panthers. I picked Panther City to win that game. I figured that they were going to do what they had did the year before against Vegas, and they were looking to take that step up. Now it's kind of time for them to show that they're still that team that we thought they were coming into this, and being able to respond to adversity. That's something they did very well the first couple of years they've been a program, is responding to adversity, losing a game, losing a player, travel adversity, whatever the case may be, and being able to respond back to that and come back with a victory, or come back in a game, something like that. This is a good chance for them to show we're still that team that fights through adversity and knows what's going on. We have a tough uphill battle after already losing a game that not only a lot of people felt like we should have won, but also that we felt like we should have won. It's now time for us to go ahead and win a very tough game at home. They're playing at home, so that is the advantage for Panther City, is Toronto's got to come to them. So it's just a matter of which team is going to show up for either side.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games, too, that Toronto can't overlook. Not that they would, but it's one of those things that Panther City is such a scrappy team. They play so fast, having watched them the past couple of years in person when they've played the Wings at the Wells Fargo Center. Like, Panther City has like this, that, like how an NFL running back has that quick twitch to them. That's what Panther City's like entire team has. That's how TK coaches them to be. They have such a quick twitch about them when they move the ball up and down the floor, that if Toronto gets caught lacking a little bit, Panther City could take advantage of that with their speed. I think that's going to be the name of the game in this one, is who controls the speed element of this game. I think Panther City being at home is huge for them in terms of not having to go to Toronto, not having to deal with a hostile environment with those fans up there, and being able to kind of set the tone early if they're able to in front of their home crowd. Toronto, though, they look good against the Wings. Mark Matthews had himself a game. I don't know if Tom Schreiber's supposed to be back in this one or not, but if he is, that only adds to the crazy depth that this team has. And, you know, they're able to score in all facets. You name it, they've got it. But I do think the key to this game is who controls the speed element between Panther City's fast-paced offense and Toronto just being able to, you know, limit that to their advantage. Not the only game on Friday night, though, is we've got a rematch, Georgia-Colorado. Colorado's first home game of the season at the Lad Haas out there in Colorado at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Another Lyle Thompson versus Zed Williams matchup, which will be very fun. Georgia looking to bounce back. Colorado looking to get their first win of the season. What are your thoughts on this early season rematch?
I would love to say that Georgia's going to go in and beat him again, but I highly, highly doubt that. Georgia's looking to get back in the winner's column. That is something that they have over Colorado, is they have already won this year, so they know kind of their formula to win for this year. Because that's something that I also don't think a lot of people take into factor, is your team's individual formula changes year by year. Regardless of who you are, whether you bring everybody back or not, the formula changes for you to win games every single year, because other teams' formulas change, which means their games plan change, which means yours has to too. Because if you come out and do the things you did last year, they're going to be very prepared for those, and then you're not going to be able to get anything done. So it's, and Georgia now knows how they win games this year. Colorado hasn't figured that out yet for themselves, but I think the bad thing is the loss to Georgia is still so fresh for Colorado. There's no way they lose to Georgia again at home this time after just doing so and not being in the win column already. They also have great film of that game last week where Vancouver was able to pick apart every part of Georgia's defense. I mean, Dauber still had 30-some saves. Like, he didn't have a bad game whatsoever. But when, you know, they're giving up every possible shot, you're not going to save them all. So I think there's some pieces here for Colorado to kind of bounce back. But at the same time, if Georgia tightens everything up defensively and looks like they did week one or week two in that game against Colorado, they could beat Colorado again, and they could probably beat anybody in the NLL because they have some of the best offensive players in the world. So it's only a matter of can their defense come out and show up, and I just don't think they'll be able to against a team that is not only angry that they already lost to you, but a team that's hungry to find their way of winning for the year.
Yeah, I mean, and Colorado's got the 1A home field advantage, I think, in the entire league behind Buffalo or right there with Buffalo. So to see Georgia back-to-back weeks on the road is going to be interesting to see how they kind of respond not being at home and Colorado being able to open up their home schedule against a team that's already beaten them this year is going to be fascinating to see how they kind of respond there. So I'm looking forward to just seeing more lacrosse at the Loud House on my TV. And then we move to Saturday, the lone game at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Vancouver travels to Rochester for a sneaky fun matchup. I'm just looking for Rochester to keep the pace that they've been on. Vancouver, I'm looking to see how they respond after a win and on the road this time. Rochester looks like one of the better teams in the league, though. Connor Fields is having an early season MVP type of year, and that's scary to think about if you're any other team in the league. Is Connor Fields playing with that type of prowess? But I'm looking forward to this game, I think, the most.
I may have to agree. Off the fact that Vancouver's cruising right now. They look good. They got their first win under Kurt. They're happy about it. They now know how they're going to win this year. Rochester, steamrolling. They know exactly how they want to play. Wow, that peppermint frosty's getting to me. They really know how they want to play. They know what works for them and what doesn't. They know how to get out of certain scenarios. They know how to fight through adversity. They're ready to compete. That's the mindset you can see that they're playing with right now, is we are ready to compete for an NLL Cup, and we want it. It's ours. Let's go grab it. And their offense is insanely good right now. And that's the big piece for them, is can their offense continue to play that well, especially against a Vancouver defense? Why do I say it that way? Vancouver thrives off defense. As long as I've been watching and seriously watching for the past 3 or 4 years now, Vancouver, most of Vancouver's offense comes from defense. They create turnovers and push it in transition, and they go while they have numbers, or they're able to get the right people on at the right time and create something and a little bit of chaos, or they just get the matchups they want. They know how to move people around to get where they need to go, but a lot of that starts on the defensive end. So if they're not going defensively, then they're probably not going offensively either. So that's going to be the big battle there, is Rochester's offense going to be able to get at the Vancouver D, or is Vancouver going to be able to turn them over, frustrate them, and get themselves out in transition?
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating week of lacrosse. Looking forward to all three of these matchups. But I think without any further ado, Deej, we head on over to the pick pond, feed some ducks, and head to our week four picks of the week, brought to you by our pals over at Kenwood Beer, the official beer partner of Underground Sports Philadelphia. It's 4.1% ABV, just 120 calories, only 8 grams of carbs. Plus, you can go to the Kenny shop and get awesome pint glasses that we have here in the studio. You can get new Kenny merch, like the Kenwood patch hat that I have right here. Absolute fire. They've got some awesome Kelly Green Kenwood merch that doubles up for if you're an Eagles fan or St. Patrick's Day. Go to kenwoodbeer.com, use the Kenny Finder as well to see who's got Kenwood Beer on tap in the Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Maryland, and New Jersey areas, or get it at your local liquor store in those areas. Must be 21 or older to do so. And of course, please drink responsibly. Deej, we start in Panther City as PCLC hosts the Toronto Rock. Who you got going in this one?
I for whatever reason, my Schreiber senses are tingling, and it tells me he's going to be back this week, and that tells me to pick the Rock. But whether he's back or not, I think the offense is in a very good position. They looked good against the Wings. I think they still can come out and look good, but I think this game will be closer than some people will believe, because Panther City is gonna fight hard, and they know that they can't get too far behind the ball with the unified standings if they want to get into the playoffs. So I got Toronto by 3.
Yeah, I'm taking Toronto as well. Even without Tom Schreiber, you still have Jalen Rogers. You still have Mark Matthews. You still have a ton of talent on that roster that I think Toronto is going to be able to go in there and kind of overpower what Panther City can throw at them. So that is my pick as well. We head to the Loud House as the Colorado Mammoth open up their home schedule to take on the Georgia Swarm in an early season rematch. Lyle Thompson, Zed Williams. I got to go with Colorado in this one, simply because the home field advantage, we know it's a thing for them. First game of the year, too, at home right around Christmas time. It's going to be rocking. And for the players on the floor, it's an early season revenge game. You want to get that game back in hand against an opponent that already beat you this year. I got to go with Colorado to win this one.
Dude, I want to pick Georgia so bad, especially because I didn't do it the first time. But after they came back down to earth last week against Vancouver, Colorado being at home and still feeling the sting because they haven't played since then, has me leaning toward the Mammoth.
Which brings us to our final game of the week. Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. An East versus West battle in Rochester as the Vancouver Warriors head in to upstate New York to take on the Rochester Nighthawks. I'm rocking with Roch Vegas in this one. I love the way that they're playing right now. Ryan Smith, Connor Fields, and the rest of those boys are buzzing. I think their offense is playing top-tier lacrosse. Their defense is doing everything in their power to hold off opponents. I think they're getting good goaltending right now. I got to go with the Nighthawks to take this one at home and improve to 3-0.
Well, I'm doing this because I think we need a flat reset. Try and get my mojo back going. We've had split games twice, three times already this year. Week 4, we're not doing that. I'm taking the Rochester Nighthawks as well. I think their offense looks really good. They're one of the best teams in the league right now. But also, I need us to have same across the board. So either we both do really bad or we both do really good, and then that like clean slates this thing and I can get back to my mojo.
So there it is. We both have Toronto. We both have Colorado. We both have Rochester. For context, last week I was 5-6 going into the week. Did not have an overall great week as I went 2-4. Did get Buffalo and Halifax correct on my picks. Deej, you went into the week 2-9 last week. But you did go 3-2. You got the game in hand on the flip game as you picked the Albany Firewolves to win. So you go into week 4 with a 5-11 record.
I went 9-11, man.
I go into the week with a, math is hard, 7-9 record. I would love,
dude, you could be 10-9, dude.
I would love that going into the final week of the year. I would love
me
that.
Me too. Because then I know that, like, yeah, it's going to reset and things go the way they should.
We'd really be like, oh, I think I got my swagger back. Oh.
Most death. Mick Jagger ain't got shit on me.
So there are your week four NLL picks of the week, brought to you by Kenwood Beer, our beer money picks of the week. Deej, final topic on the docket. The PLL Championship Series rosters and matchups have been announced. Quite the roster rundown for each team, and the schedules are lit. Obviously, the Champ Series going on from February 14th to the 19th, 2024, at the St. James. Here are your Championship Series rosters, everybody. For the Boston Cannons, Marcus Holman, Asher Nolting, Ryan Drenner, Bubba Fairman, Ethan Rawl, Pat and Chris Aslanian, Matt Campbell, the newly re-signed Matt Kavanaugh, Josh Stout, Colin Kirst, and Adam Gittleman. Your Philadelphia Water Dogs, everybody. Yes, Philadelphia. We have a team competing for a championship in February. Lock in. Michael Sowers. Kieran McCardle is in for the championship series. Jake Caraway makes his return to the championship series. Ryan Conrad, Jack Traynor, Jeff Connor, Christian Scarpello, Jake Higgins, Charlie Hayes, Kyle Borda, Matt DeLuca, and Jason Rose. Your Utah Archers, Grant Ament, Matt Moore, Ryan Ambler, Piper Bond, John Robbins, Cole Williams, Reese Eddy, Connor Marr, Ryan Oghaven, Ronan Jacoby, Nick Washuta, and Patrick Birkinshaw. And your California Redwoods look like this. Rob Pinnell, Romar Dennis, Sergio Perkovic, Nekai Montgomery, Jules Henningberg, Ricky Mizon, Garrett Eppel, Brian Tevlin, Ryan Tierney, Kevin Rogers, Tim Trautner, and Jack Kelly. Deej, your thoughts on the Champ Series rosters?
I love them. Honestly, I think every team did a great job of taking into factor what other guys are doing. You know, some guys have jobs, some guys are working NLL, and all other kind of things on the earth that these guys do during the offseason. Took the guys that they really needed. Like, there's a lot of star players from each of these teams playing ball this February. And then, like, the moves to go out and get a guy like Ricky Miazon. What's the other guy's name from the Cannons? You were just rolling through them. I should have been pulling them up myself.
Josh Stout.
Yes, Josh Stout. Like, guys like that, those were the things that I was intrigued by, is that they found really good ways to go and get the pieces that they really kind of needed help in. Like, let's be honest here. D-mid's going to be huge for, like, or shouldn't say D-mid, but defense is going to be huge for the California Redwoods. And having a guy like Ricky Miazon who can body anybody on the turf and then pick the ball up and go score is going to be huge. And I feel like every team really went out and built a roster that can help them win. They went and plugged the holes based off of, but the thing I'm most excited about is the Redwoods and the simple fact that a very large majority of this team plays together on the Redwoods in the summer. Like, this is, they almost basically took their summer roster outside of Ricky Miazon and brought them into PLL. So, or into the Champ Series. So they already know these guys' strengths. They already know where guys like to catch the ball, how guys like to communicate. So they don't need a lot of time together to point those things out or to get back in the rhythm. It's a couple quick passes and those guys are ready to go again. So I think that may play a huge key, but I mean, the same thing goes for the Philadelphia Water Dogs as well. They have a lot of guys that they've already played with. So it's going to, and I mean, the Cannons also have a handful of guys that they played with during summer ball. So I'm thoroughly intrigued to see how this is going to play out. The Archers are just the big question mark because so many of their guys are playing NLL. So it's an up and down situation, but I still think their roster is ready to compete. I don't think that they're going to be blown out by any means or anything like that. They just don't have the same number of starters or guys getting consistent play in the summer as the other three do.
I think really the only guys the Archers truly are missing are Mac O'Keefe because he's coaching, so it's a bummer we won't see Mac. And then Fieldsy, but I think the thing with the Archers is... And Tom. But Tom didn't play in Champ Series last year either. That's the thing that the Archers, I think, have the biggest advantage is these guys from Grant, Matt Moore, Ryan Ambler, Cole Williams with Chrome. I forget if Rizzetti was on the Archers roster for Champ Series or not. But a bunch of these guys on this Archers roster have championship series experience, and I think that's a huge benefit to have in their bag. And I mean, obviously, that also that goes for Caraway and Romar and anybody that played in it last year too, to kind of have that experience in the format to help out.
I guess it depends on how many guys played World Games.
Yeah.
Because World Games was sixes, so like that also just depends. I don't know how many guys were in on that, so like those guys are also going to bring in that experience. But I think the Archers not having everyone will be, that's why I said they're still going to be competitive, because like it subjugates with them having so much experience in this specific setting, whereas everybody else has that camaraderie already. They still have to get used to playing at the St. James, you know, 4 days in a row, back to like basically back to back to, like the Archers are used to that. They've done that before. So I think everything kind of is evened out on the table, and it's really going to come down to play like it should.
And you want to talk about World Games experience for the Water Dogs to have their 1-2 punch of Michael Sowers and Kieran McArdle up top is huge. Plus Christian Scarpello played for Team England. So he's got that really experience.
I hate that you say up top because it's down low.
Up top, down low, how high? Do your ears hang low? Do they wobble to the flow?
Do they shine in the light? Are they platinum or are they gold?
That's your chains, not your ears. If you got gold ears or platinum ears, we got a problem.
Facts.
Painted like the Oscars trophy.
I'm screaming.
And I think Ivan Caraway with those two as, you know, your de facto attackman, like Caraway playing for Atlas last year in the Champ Series, has that experience there, and he was a fucking dog, no pun intended, for Atlas last year in the Championship Series. That sneaky, the Water Dogs have quite the roster to throw out there for people. I also think a lot of people are going to sleep on the Cannons just because they don't come off as a team that's fast, but they've got precision on that roster from Marcus, from Asher, from Drenner, Cav. Like, they've got guys that can, that have range and can score from anywhere.
I don't know, man. That team's fast too, though, because they still have Bubba, Zach. Who else is playing back there for them? Stout's pretty fast too. He's a D mid.
I mean, Drenner's fast.
Drenner's fast. Like the
that. But I'm saying, like on paper, like you look at these teams, and I think you would say like Cannons aren't necessarily the fastest team. But they've got the precision and accuracy that they're going to be lethal scoring the ball.
I would argue the Redwoods are the slowest.
That's true. Good counterpoint.
I'd probably look at the Redwoods roster and be like, they're the slowest.
That's true.
But I don't think
I just said.
And we'll try and run as fast as Redwoods will, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like Redwoods get caught up in the speed of things and how good they could be in transition because of their size and shooting ability, and they try and get into that race. Whereas Cannons might try for a little bit and be like, whoa, like that's not working for us. Let's dial it back. And, like, they can choose to go slower and will if they need to. I don't think the Redwoods will.
Yeah. Trying to pull up the schedule as well, since we got the matchups and everything. And we'll get more in depth on this, obviously, when the Champ Series gets a little bit closer, as we are 1-0 on this podcast in picking Championship Series winners. How you doing? Keep it moving. But we kick things off on Valentine's Day. Redwoods versus Cannons is the first matchup of the championship series, followed by a championship game rematch between the Water Dogs and the Archers. Then on February 16th, there's an off day on the Thursday, the 15th. So February 16th, it's Redwoods versus Water Dogs, Cannons versus Archers. And then we have Archers versus Redwoods on Saturday, February 17th, and then Water Dogs versus Cannons as the nightcap. And then your semifinals are on Sunday, February 18th, and then Monday, February 19th, is your championship.
I'm hyped for that. I'm doing my best to get there. And I think I'm gonna do it here on the pod so that I have to do it. I got some extra rollover PTO days that I was thinking about doing something with them in January. It's three of them. What this means if I use them is that I probably wouldn't be able to come to all of this champ series. But what I'm going to do is save them. And then I'll still make more for the beginning of the year. So I'll be able to take like a whole week off and just...
Look at that.
Be there.
Time blocked off.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there. I got to get to the St. James.
You're like the Kylian Mbappe meme. I will be there.
I will be there. I will be there.
There it is. And I mean, for the people out there, we are hashtag up to something on this show in particular. So stay tuned for that. But Champ Series is going to be absolutely wild. I will be there. Deej will be there. It's going to be all time. I think it's the four perfect teams for this season in particular to be there. Also, shout out to friend of the program and acting head coach for the Redwoods, Chris Collins, getting his chance to coach this team because Nat will be coaching at Ohio Northern and be mid-season pretty much with his squad. So Chris Collins will be the acting head coach for the Redwoods, and Brody Merrill getting a shot to coach as an assistant coach with the Cannons, which I think is really awesome. Brings the experience from the World Games in there from Team Canada. I think that's going to add such a fascinating element to this Cannons team too, having Brody kind of bring his brain of just his overall lacrosse knowledge and then his knowledge of everything that he experienced coaching in July at the World Games. I think that's such a fun wrinkle to this for the coaching staff for the Cannons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think all of the I think that's probably the most exciting thing about the Champ Series is you get to see so many different pieces of these teams. Like, there's so many players that are playing NLL or working jobs that then can't play. So then you get to see some of the reserve guys these teams have. Coaches. Like Nat St. Laurent, he would love to be at the Champ Series. But what's he doing? He's coaching at Ohio Northern in the thick of his, you know, his college season. So he can't be there. We're going to get to see Chris Collins in a head coaching scenario, and then he's going to bring somebody alongside him. It's Brody Merrill stepping in because what else does Brody Merrill have to do at this point? Like, outside of coaching at the professional level, he's in the college level, he's done it all. Like, it's just the next step for him. So that's the kind of piece I like to see is there's so many moving parts behind the scenes that really help to put out that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever day the PLL team plays product out that you don't normally get to see. And the Champ Series is really providing those people an opportunity to shine and, you know, get their name out there.
Yeah. I think, you know, and we talk about the additional players like Ricky Miazon, Kyle Borda for the Water Dogs, even though he has suited up for them before in the past, he's getting another shot with them, with some guys being out due to prior commitments and everything. Josh Stout for the Cannons. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that are getting an opportunity. Jason Rose to be the backup goalie for Matt DeLuca because Dylan Ward is playing with the Mammoth. Like, I think that's the fun part too. And we talked about this a ton with Champ Series and then, you know, the hope for potential whether it's, you know, minor league or affiliate teams, kind of like the G League in the NBA for the PLL, where you have guys on a roster, and then maybe on a Tuesday night, you know, they're playing sixes against each other and against these affiliate teams or whatever it may be. I think that would be such a fun wrinkle to add to the PLL. Obviously, way, way, way down the line, but you think about what sixes can provide for the sport and what it can provide for the professional aspect of the sport. The Champ Series is just like the first building block of that.
I mean, and it's so exciting, and it's just another opportunity to get people involved like that. And that's like, I think it goes hand in hand with the cities. Like,
yeah.
Now that people in these cities or in these areas have something to be attached to, maybe they watch in February and God forbid, because I don't want them to, the Philadelphia Water Dogs win, you know, the Champ Series. They're now more fans invested because their team just won a championship. Even though it's in February and it's not the full season, they 100% don't know that yet. And two, it's just another thing for them to celebrate and walk around and say, well, my team won it and yours didn't. Like, these kind of things matter to fans and having argue points when they're talking with other fans. This is just another thing to give these lacrosse teams a talking point. Sure, the Redwoods haven't done anything, but they'd be one of two teams that has a championship series trophy, and they can say, well, we got this and you don't. You know, it, those kind of pieces are important to not only teams but fans too. So, like, it's just, that's the kind of coolest part of this, is it provides another talking point, another argument, another thing to be proud of for fans, team, and even up into the front office. Like, that's, they can say, we put on basically two championships a year. One's a lot shorter than the other, but there's still two teams raising a trophy each season. That's huge.
Yeah, and I mean, it, for anybody that's new to the PLL because of the home cities or just new to the PLL in general, like, the championship series, to put it in perspective, is basically the PLL's equivalent to Champions League in professional soccer, where Champions League is going on at the same time as your typical football season for the Premier League, for Serie A, and the rest of the teams that qualify for the Champions League. Top four teams in the standings from the regular season of the PLL season qualify for the championship series. It's all about bragging rights. You get another trophy to your trophy case if you're the Archers. You know, that's the cool part about this year too, is you're defending champion from your regular season slate is now in the championship series, which was not the case last year when the Water Dogs won the championship. They were the 5 seed, so they didn't qualify for the championship series. So now you have the team that just won the overall title also competing for another trophy this year while having the team that they played in that championship in the championship series. You have a team like the Redwoods who haven't been competing for a championship since 2019 in any facet, now fighting for another championship opportunity. And then you have the Cannons as an expansion team, as the final expansion team to this point, and a team that was like the feel-good story of 2023 in the championship series as well. And it's all about, you know, we saw the discourse last year. It was, everyone thought Atlas was going to walk away with the championship series title. They had the guys to do it. They were going to obliterate everybody. And then Chrome played the game of their lives in the championship game and walked away with the title. That's the fun part about the championship series. It is another trophy to your team's trophy case. Now that there's home cities, it adds that much more of a bragging rights element for the fandoms. And it's just going to be so much fun watching these four teams compete. I can't wait for February. It's going to be absolute scenes, and lacrosse Twitter during the Champ Series last year was wild. I can't wait for this year. I can't wait for Deej to take in the St. James, because that place is a literal funplex. And it's going to be one hell of a time. So as the Champ Series gets closer, we will be breaking it down in depth even more. DJ, any final thoughts before we get out of here before the holidays?
I mean, mostly just thanks for the gift of 700. for the Christmas holidays. The support is amazing, and that's, you know, all I can ask for. 2024 is going to be big for all of our fans out there. It's going to be big for us. It's going to be big for everybody, man. It's just another year that we get to continue to progress as humans, as people, as a podcast, as a business. I'm just really excited for the new year and all the exciting things that are going to be coming. We're ending the year on a banger note. I mean, football is going to be great to end the year. Lacrosse is going to be great. The NBA is like the only thing I'm not paying attention to. College basketball has already been insane. Nobody is safe. To be a sports fan right now is like the best it's ever been in all reality. So I'm just really excited for the future of sports, future of our lives, and for all the continued support from the fans. Can we get to, I don't know, 750 before the year's over? Like, it's doable. Everybody out there that knows somebody. So if you get somebody and then tell them to get somebody, we could be at 1,000 before the year's over. But
facts.
I'm basically just rumbling now, so I'm gonna leave y'all alone.
I mean, 750 would be great. We got 10 days to do it by the time, or, you know, 9 days by the time you guys are listening to this. But go follow us on the socials at OTB Laxpod, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook.com/UndergroundSportsPHI. Follow Deej on Twitter at @SCS_NextGreat. Follow me at KBIZZL311. Subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast in audio form. It really does help the show continue to grow, helps us hit new milestones, helps us do more dope stuff with you guys, and lets us, you know, pitch new ideas to different people that they want to see the numbies. You keep subscribing, that helps that happen. And of course, subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. It is truly the number one spot for content in the sports world from independent content creators like Deej and myself. You get full video episodes of this show every single week, every show on our network in full video form, live streams, clips, shorts, original video content. It's all on our YouTube channel, so go subscribe. Let's be on that road to 800. We're 99 away. youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. And leave those comments in the YouTube comment section, because as you saw, we read them on the show. Get your merch at phiapparel.co and use code underground for 10% off your orders. Everybody have a safe and happy holiday, and we will see you next week for the final episode of the year. But until then, we're getting the heck up out of here, and we are signing off. Enjoy this week of lacrosse. Peace.
Peace. You want to go.
And that's outside the box.